This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont prides itself on a history of leadership on civil rights issues, from being the first state to abolish slavery to the first to legislate gay marriage without a judicial mandate. All of that is true, but none of it means that there aren't complications, many of them, to the narrative of Vermont's unbroken civil rights leadership. It's American Archives Month, and former state archivist Gregory Sanford is giving a talk this evening that illuminates some of the showcasing and complications he's unearthed through his research in the Vermont State Archives. Gregory Sanford, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Jane. It's been a little while, but good to be here.
I know. We're thrilled to have you back. I always love talking with you. So, you know, I mentioned that we have these firsts, these achievements that Vermont is justly proud of, abolishing slavery, civil unions, same-sex marriage. Is it wrong to point to those with pride?
Oh, I think that Vermonters should take pride, and it is a long history of civil liberties and civil rights. The thing is that all these things, starting with the 1777 Constitution's prohibition against adulthood slavery, is that none of these constitutional or statutory acts abolished human nature, that we retain all our strengths and our foibles. And what I have encountered over the years in my research and have been looking at since I retired is how they manifest themselves. How do we move forward? It's not a given that we'll always move forward. It's not a given that it'll be an unbroken chain. There are things that we do that are very good, and then you read to me some horrifying things afterwards that suggest we're not quite there yet.
Well, can you talk a little bit about some of the things you've unearthed? And let's start with the research that you've been looking at on different ethnic groups in Burlington in the 1930s. And this is research that was done by Ellen Anderson. Can you talk about how that research came about and what she found?
Yeah, she was working on a book called We Americans, Cleavage in a American City. It was published in 1937. She worked for the Commission on Country Life, which had some associations with the Eugenics Survey in Vermont. But she wanted to look at how ethnic groups in Burlington viewed themselves and viewed others. And it's interesting because given some of the current dialogues, there's a much broader and deeper immigrant community, if you will, that was in Burlington in 1930. By 1930 census, they said 40% of people living in Burlington were either immigrants or the children of immigrants. So she picked five groups, I think. It was the Yankee stock. It was the Irish. It was the French Canadian, with some English Canadians thrown in. It was, I think, she did Jews, and the other one eludes me for the moment. And then there were other groups that were small in the population but were at least mentioned or commented upon by the interviews she did with each of the major groups. And those included Germans, Syrians, which sort of surprised me, what they called Chinese. I don't know if they were really Chinese or just simply a general term for Asians, and then African-Americans. So she interviewed some of the leaders in the community from each ethnic group. Then they did surveys of households, and then they sent out detailed questionnaires to about 260 people in each ethnic covering all ethnic groups. Huh. I highly recommend, by the way, it is infinitely fascinating reading. It's Archives Month. Go to the archives. But it's, you know, it is just truly, it's a dialogue among ourselves. And what it really, you get out of the end of it is, you know, we are much more of a tossed salad than a melting pot. It's how we view, and a lot of them you think that, okay, a lot of people say, well, the Jews are sharp businessmen.
You mean even in that time frame they were saying that?
Oh, absolutely. And then the Greeks ran restaurants, and the Syrians were shopkeepers. And, you know, the Yankees didn't care about the French Canadians coming in terms of losing jobs in the mills because the Yankees didn't want those jobs anyway. The Irish, on the other hand, felt the French Canadians were willing to work for less, so were affecting their ability to get jobs in the mills. So it's this whole set of perceptions and self-perceptions about how do you think about yourself. The two groups that really are pushed to the outside are the Chinese, if you will, the Asians, and the African-Americans. And all the groups interviewed really put a distance between themselves. And these are people who cannot be assimilated.
When you look at this and you look at this research and then you bring it into the present day, and there are people who say this, some of these things were negative. There was virulent racism. There was ethnic stereotyping, as you just mentioned. There was segregation. Why in the world do you want to bring this back up? We're trying to move beyond this. What's the value in looking at this research and investigating it and really shining a lens on our current day through what we're seeing in the past?
Well, I think sometimes if we look at certain histories or listen to our own self-perceptions, we see this godlike race that always understood and was always for civil liberties and civil rights. Without understanding, it's been a dialogue. Sometimes it's been an incredibly difficult dialogue. There are some things you read in these records that you cringe. But the idea is, to me, it's uplifting. It means we're humans and that we actually work on this stuff. That we will, sometimes it takes a while, and for the excluded groups, That's a very difficult period. But over time, we seem to develop a better understanding of each other, but it's a work in progress. We haven't gotten there yet. We will never get there because we constantly have to understand who we are, who our fellow citizens are, and how can we understand them if they come from a different perspective?
We have a couple minutes, and I'd love for you to tell the story of the first female legislator in Vermont, Edna Beard, and what happened when she actually got into the chamber for her first day.
Yeah, and this is an example. So the 19th Amendment extending suffrage to women was passed. Edna Beard from Orange became the first woman elected to the legislature. She was there in 1921. And the 246 gentlemen in the House said, okay, you get to pick your seat first. And then for long, long time afterwards, there are 246 members, nobody would pick the seat next to her to be her seatmate. And when finally the representative from Pomfret said, okay, I'll select that seat, the whole place broke into laughter among all the men, and there were catcalls, and there were other. And this is what I mean. We didn't get rid of women had the vote, but we didn't get rid of our weaknesses as humans, and it only over time that we begin to understand we have to address something. There's something wrong with us. The other quick thing is that, you know, it took 20 more years after women had the right to vote in Vermont that and after a statewide referendum, that they had the right to serve on juries. So, again, we don't have one act. The thing's finished. Let's go on with it. It's an ongoing story.
I find that illuminating because, you know, you look at here we have this first female legislator. Isn't this great? We've sort of broken through that glass ceiling, and yet nobody wanted to sit next to her. And finally, you know, the guy who does sit next to her, he's ridiculed. And yeah, it is this sort of two steps forward, one step back scenario where we're trying to make progress, but there is also, as you say at Gregory, this this humanity, or that we're all human, but that we're striving. Is there another story that you really like in the presentation that you're giving tonight? I know they're all your darlings, but
yeah, exactly. What I don't know, I make up. Well, the other story I'm going to talk about, and this is very interesting because so many people are even sensitive about what I'm going to talk about, which is the fight over renaming Niggerhead Pond, Mountain, and Brook in Marshfield that went on from 1966 to 1971. And among the many fascinating things about it is how do primarily white Vermonters have an informed discussion over whether niggerhead is a racist term. And there were many, many, many people writing in, keep the name. It's not a racist name. And then you have things like Shirley Chisholm, the U.S. representative from New York, writing in and going, what's with you people? What don't you get? But there was not enough diversity to have an informed dialogue.
Boy, it's really interesting. And when you talk about reflections today, we certainly see some of that in conversations around, for example, the South Burlington High School mascot name and those questions about what is racist, what is charged, and what isn't, and who gets to decide. Boy, really fascinating stuff. Gregory Sanford is former state archivist. He's giving a talk tonight at the State Archives about some of the stuff that we've been talking about and more. It's at 6 p.m. at the Vermont State Archives and Records Administration. Administration in Middlesex. Gregory, thank you very much for talking with us. As always, we're always pleased to talk with you.
Thank you, Jane.